We'll talk here on the Q Afternoon Show. The Doors, Alabama Song. Ian Huey, welcome back to the Q Afternoon Show.
Thanks, Ryan. I think it's year five for us, isn't it?
Yes, and this is how I know things are going very well with the Whiskey Festival. I get the call saying, when are you guys giving away tickets? I say, oh, tickets went on sale. And then I look on the internet, and they went on sale like a month before and sold out in 2 hours. So you don't even have to use the queue to promote ticket sales anymore.
Well, I think what was interesting this year, because we did things a little different with the sale, it's interesting watching a lineup form at 4 a.m. in the morning for these down Douglas Street, and they're all a bunch of middle-aged men standing out in the cold at 4 a.m. in the morning. It was I arrived at 7, and there was 30-some people in line. So, yeah, I guess that's positive from that perspective. But at the same time, it just shows that the interest in the spirit is still pretty vibrant in town. So that's great for us.
Yes, yes. Introduce your guest here.
Well, this year I brought one of the world aficionados to Victoria. And he's come every year since year one. And he is the master of the whiskey tasting world. His name is Mr. Jim Murray. And his new Bible of 2011, he has reviewed 4,500 different whiskeys, and he walks and he talks normally.
But we've got him sitting in the world's smallest chair right now.
Yeah, it's very good. You notice sitting, not after 4,500 whiskeys, not standing.
Right? Now, you got into town yesterday, Jim. Have you ever been to the Victoria Whiskey Festival before?
Oh, gosh, yeah. I've been here since it started.
What do you think?
Well, I do these things all over the world. I get to about 20 different countries a year, and I have to say that this is the one gig that I make sure I come back to. I mean, you're looking at me, you know, sitting here. This jacket was bought in this town. Look, it's a Wilson jacket from 3 years ago. I do all my shopping here now.
Wow.
This has almost become like a second home to me in a way.
Uh-huh. So what are you looking forward to this year at the festival? What are you?
Well, I've got to admit, I mean, Ian said about, 30 middle-aged guys standing outside waiting for tickets. That is not the right impression, because when you're there, there's people of, all ages, right the way through from 21 onwards, and there's plenty of women. But, believe me, there's plenty of those. And being a single guy, maybe that's another reason I come, I don't know. But the point is that there's plenty of different whiskies, and there is an extraordinary groundswell of interest.
It's a great mix.
I think one thing, Ryan, that Jim certainly brought to the table for us is perspective, is that a $500 bottle of whiskey is a $500 bottle of whiskey. It doesn't make it any better than a $23 bottle of whiskey. And Jim's knowledge and expertise in this is kind of refined a lot of people in town to say, hey, look, I don't have to go out and spend $100 to have a good bottle of whiskey. If I go and pick a $23 bottle of Ballantine's off the shelf, that is a good product.
So, I mean, for instance, everyone seems to think, oh, Scotch single malt, that is the be-all and end-all. And, you know, over the last 20 years, there's been a huge growth in snobbery, I regret to say, regarding whiskey. And I tried to murder a few sacred cows, to be honest with you. And this year in the Whiskey Bible 2011, the World Whiskey of the Year went to a Ballantine's 17, a blended Scotch. And there's people going, you're joking. It's not a single malt. How on earth can that be World Whiskey of the Year? Like last year, you know, it was a rye whiskey, not a Canadian rye, but a Kentucky rye. And people say, but it's not a Scotch. How can it be World Whiskey of the Year? So what I try to do and what this event does every year, it gives people the opportunity to go out there and discover, to find the whiskies that they've never tasted before and go for it. It's a journey of discovery.
Now, we've got our glasses filled with some whiskey here. Coming up, I think, Jim, you should take me and Ian through how to properly...
Well, the first thing you do is actually nose it. And we've got pretty good glasses here. These are glasses with stems. They're rounded. So, therefore, you're actually keeping the aroma within the glass itself. Now, what you don't want to do is stick your nose straight into that glass, because if you do, you might as well snort whiskey. You know, you're taking a line of whiskey. You're taking alcohol and everything, and that's not what it's about. What we're looking for is the complexity of the whiskey. We're looking for its little idiosyncrasies, its trademarks, and the only way to do that is, and this is where I cause a little bit of controversy, I say to people, don't add water. And there'll be loads and loads of guys in the Scotch whisky industry tomorrow at their stands telling people, oh, add water. And I say, don't add water. What you do is that you warm the whisky in the glass, and then you nose it, because you will see the whisky change in style and personality. As it warms, more character will come out. And then you taste it, and you don't have to swallow. You can spit, because if you spit, then you stay sober. And by staying sober, your senses are able to make sense of what's going on. If you swallow straight away, then after a short period of time, the alcohol kicks in, and it all becomes a bit of a mush.
And the next thing you know is you've had 20 drinks at the Victoria Whiskey Festival.
Well, yeah. I think the thing is, too, is that this year we'll probably be showing over 160 different whiskeys, 10 different countries. And Japan is now at the table. We'd been trying to curry favor with them to come to Victoria. And they're presenting this year officially. So that's kind of a new thing for us, as well as, we know, as you know, we did whiskey and chocolate kind of not formally last year. And this year we're doing a masterclass of whiskey and chocolate. So whiskey can go with several things. Jim is not a big food and whiskey guy, but the people have spoken and we answered. So,
okay, we'll talk more about the Victoria Whiskey Festival and with guest Ian Huey. Having a couple drinks, having some whiskey. Now, the whiskey aficionados in for a rare savory treat at annual festival. That was in the newspaper, Times Colonist, Ian, and they left out the Q's TLC Fund for Kids. Great story from Pedro Arias, but didn't mention the Q. It says, yes, attendees are encouraged to leave their vehicles at home. A ride home is included for all those at the consumer tasting. But it's the Q's TLC for Fun for Kids, and you guys have just been great year after year for us.
I think what's important is that for everybody to realize is that this is a 100% charity event. There's no money for promoters or anything. We just give all the money back to charity. And when this year's done, we'll have put $75,000 back into the community, and the TLC Fund has been on every year, and we're just gracious that you guys are so involved in the community and what you guys do. And to the people out there, if you come to the festival, you might be chauffeured home by Ryan tomorrow night.
Yes, you could ask for me at the front desk at the Hotel Grand Pacific, and if I'm not out on a run, I'll drive you home. How many DJs are doing that in Victoria? Now, Jim,
will you have the radio on?
Well, sometimes you do pick up people who say, the Q? Oh, I don't know who they are. And you don't know, no, what about my voice? You don't recognize my voice? And no. So not everybody listens to the Q, but most of the people who get in the vehicle get a laugh out of it.
Actually, that'd be brilliant. You'd be driving home pretending to be doing a show, you know. They think, oh, we're listening to the Q.
Now, I was asking you off-air here, Jim Murray and the Whiskey Bible. This is looks like a fabulous book. Over 4,500 whiskeys tasted, evaluated, and rated. How did you get into this for a line of work?
Well, I've been a writer all my life, actually. And, you know, I mix Fleet Street and all that kind of stuff. And I went to my first distillery when I was 17, believe it or not. But actually, before then, I was coaching soccer for a month over in Maryland. And while I was there, and I was 16, I actually did manage to taste in excess of 50 different ryes and bourbons. And that was it. I mean, it was genuine love. And from the age of 17 onwards, I've just literally been on a journey. And I've written many, many books. The first ones really that took you to places that you just wouldn't believe, like Pakistan and places like that where they make whiskey.
It's unreal, the map, Ian. You have a map of all the distillers worldwide, and wow. It's...
Yeah, that was an interesting thing. We went to the Focus Corporation in town here, and they said, could you put a whiskey map together? We gave them some information, And we ended up with the most elaborate, complex whiskey map in the world. And so we're grateful to them for doing that. And everybody's quite fascinated, including the agents and the distillers that come on. They say, well, we've never quite seen a map as accurate and as well produced as that. So that was a little benefit that we weren't expecting. So, yeah, just these little things have been coming our way, which has been good for the festival as well.
And it's not standing still. There's just new distilleries popping up all over the place. And at the moment, I'm talking with a guy who's trying to start a distillery in Iceland, for instance. So that'd be quite a useful, you know, stopping stone either there on the way back for when I come over here. You know, see how that's going on.
You could do a world tour.
Well, I've done that. Yeah, I mean, yeah. In fact, do you know something? Back in the mid-90s, it was pointed out to me by the Canadian Distillers Association that I became the first person that they actually knew of in existence to have actually visited every single distillery in Canada. No one had ever done that. And I was quite shocked when they told me that.
Or lived to talk about it.
Well, I do spit.
Yeah.
And I have to, because believe it or not, I mean, you're talking about 4,500 whiskies. Well, 1,066 of those were tasted between April and July last year. There was 1,066 new whiskies that we could find. You know, wow. I have a team of researchers who just spend, you know, it's a full-time job, them tracking down whiskies from all over the world. And one of the things that I do every 2 years is I come back, I have two visits here, and I actually stay at the Empress and write the Canadian section, or rewrite it every 2 years by tasting every Canadian that we can find.
So you just might be the guy at the end, sitting in a bar stool, who's writing your next edition of
I don't do it in a bar, because you've got to have a controlled environment. It's like my office is in England. We actually, believe it or not, we took over the flat above my tasting lab so that no one could live in it. So, therefore, there was no smells of cooking or anything like that. You know, to actually, none of the tasting notes that are in there are written on bar stools. They're not written at the distilleries. They are written in a situation where I have complete control over the environment. And that way, it's totally neutral, and I'm giving the whiskey the best chance to talk to
a scientist in the name of whiskey. That might be a good reminder. Don't wear your heavy perfumes and all that as you get dressed up for the consumer tasting tomorrow.
Yes, no aftershave, no perfume, and don't eat garlic or soft cheese before you come. You'll ruin your palate, and we want you to come out and enjoy, because as we know, at the end of the night, you're going to get a ride home, and Jim will be there, and there'll be 45 other distilleries represented from all over the world, and if you got a ticket, good on you. If you don't, you know where to stand next year in line.
I also recommend that you don't go to a pub beforehand and have a couple of pints before you head on, or have some champagne, because, for instance, the champagne will go to you, you know, that will take the bubbles, will take the alcohol to your head quicker. So it's best to go there having had a good meal with as few sugary things as possible. Keep out the sweet stuff, because the sweet stuff on the palate is what means that you can't find the actual complexity, the balance on the whiskey, because to find the great whiskies, you've got to find the sweetness. And if you've got sugars all over your palate, it makes it incredibly hard to do.
So look for the, you'll have your book here, Jim Murray, The Whiskey Bible, at the Hotel Grand.
And am I signing pen?
Yes.
As well?
I'm going to sign my copy here. Hey, thanks, Ian, for bringing Jim by. And